afternoon. This is Wordplay. Our guest today is Laura Hope Gill.
Hello, Jeff. Sebastian.
Hey, Laura, how you doing?
Hey, Laura.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Abby.
Abby's here. Jeff's here. I'm here. My boy Avery's here. You might hear him in the background. I had some music, but it's not coming through. Some Brian Eno. It's on there, but it's not on there.
And Brian Eno would love that, I think.
Pushing your slider actually. Up. You've got a slider.
There he is. It's all mine. David Byrne is coming to town soon. He's playing Brian Eno music, so we'll start with this and we'll get back in a minute. The night bell is calling, this burden, this falling, the world turning. This what I thought I knew, this what I thought was true, this I understood. In the deep woods, ah, there I stood, a child so fair. This on a certain square, this down the dirty stairs, this to see the table set, this with golden chairs, this ah, to follow, 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 follow. Start the show today with a reading from a document that's going to be soon on in the next 10 years, I think. Every single waste isolation plant in the country.
Nuclear waste.
From the effort to create a 10,000-year marking system for the WIPP waste isolation pilot plant site by the scientists at the Sandia National Laboratories, this text will be placed on permanent markers above nuclear waste disposal sites. I'm going to pass it around. I'll start. This place is a message and part of a system of messages. Pay attention to it. Sending this message was important to us. We considered ourselves to be a powerful culture. This is not a place of honor.
No highly esteemed deed is commemorated here. Nothing valued is here. What is here is dangerous and repulsive to us. This message is a warning about danger.
The danger is in a particular location. It increases toward a center. The center of danger is here, of a particular size and shape, and below us. The danger is still present in your time as it was in ours.
The danger is to the body, and it can kill. The form of the danger is an emotion of energy, emanation of energy. The danger is unleashed only if you substantially disturb this place physically. This place is best shunned and left uninhabited.
And that is our letter to the future.
It's really optimistic.
I wonder what language it's going to be in, because
I know.
10,000 years from now, I'm sure they'll still be speaking English, don't you think?
Oh, of course. Right. I love this. This message is a warning about danger.
Yes.
This danger is a message about warning.
And it's from the people that wrote it are it looks like a list of 20 different professors from Cornell and a whole bunch of places that got together.
Yeah. Well, this is sacred text,
Right. That's right.
Nothing valued is here. This is not a place of honor. I mean, it's
the profane text.
I should put this in my bathroom. I think this would be, So, Laura, you have some poems.
I will redeem that document.
Please do. Yeah.
The Catalog of Rushing Water. There is the place where water turns to feather and flies up. There is the place where rock dips into itself to let the water in. There is the place where an old tree has fallen and turns to stone. There is the place where the Sanskrit word for peace spells itself in the descent. There is the place where a face appears in the current and it is always your own face. There is the place where moss and fern drink deeply, inviting you to drink. There is the place where the only reason to leave it is so you can once return and don't. There is the place where the thing you were looking for found you and washed you clean. And that is not one of the nuclear waste sites from the future.
Indeed. Damn straight. So these poems are going with photographs. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, this is a collection that will be published by Grateful Steps Publishing in February, called The Soul Tree, and it is a collaboration of my poems with the photographs by John Fletcher, and it's going to be hardcover and weighty and beautiful. These pictures are just sweeping. And I wrote them when WordFest was just about to start, and I was up to my neck in grant writing for the next WordFest while also pulling together the details for the WordFest that was just about to begin. And John photographed me and Glennis and Alan Wolf, and I went to his website. And seeing these pictures, I just wrote 35 poems in one afternoon. And
as
escaped.
Is your want. As is your want.
You are insane.
Yes.
I was like, WordFest does not exist. Nothing exists. Only these poems exist. And I just went in, and then he didn't believe me, so he kept sending me pictures, and I kept writing the poems back within a few seconds. Yeah. And it was just this wonderful synergy that I'm so thankful for. And here's another one called Covenant. And it accompanies a picture of these gorgeous Appalachians with a rainbow shooting through gray clouds.
I'll hang that up behind you as you read.
There we go.
Okay.
This is a place of honor. That's not from the poem. That's from the list. Covenant. When Noah saw his, he was like to fall overboard, remembering all those he left behind so he could carry forward the stories of the animals. The lesson was always to see more than just one color, one part of the story, even if it meant reminding the people they aren't the only ones. Yet how they howled to learn God was favoring the beasts for this one. It was a new world run by hoof and paw. All the finned things carried them. And Noah stepped ashore gratefully, a steward on his own ship, and lowered the gate for the beasts, who clambered down and passed him, leaving him awash in their dust.
That's a great poem.
Thank you.
And for everybody who's listening carefully, that's Curious George, PBS Kids or Org. Avery's playing that in the background.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So. A little counterpoint.
Yeah.
How lovely. Yeah. I have a poem for Glennis Redmond.
Oh, great.
Who?
Let's do the plug now, at least for the first time. She's reading.
This is an honor.
Big honor.
Yeah.
Of the glorious, beautiful, magnificent, powerful G-Red, Glennis Redmond.
Who'll be reading at Malaprops next Saturday night and will be on Wordplay next Sunday.
Yeah, and I think she's reading Friday night.
Is it Friday night?
Friday night at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Malaprops. Yeah. And it's going to be a fun night.
And it is.
It's also a birthday party.
Birthday party and honoring her new release, Under the Sun.
Yeah, her new book.
which is phenomenal. And so this is a poem in honor of Glenys Redmond, and I wrote it in honor of her reading, but I can't wait to read it, and so I'm going to read it now.
Awesome.
And it's called The Carpet. In the East, and Glenys, I called and left a message saying I was going to read this for you. We love you. Oh, The Carpet. In the East, when they wove a carpet, the whole village gathered. Each child had a place at the wool and knelt to pick out the stones and the splinters. It was their place in the village, in time, in the world. And each adolescent had a place at the wool and beat the wool with a stick or combed the wool, and music played. Young and old, the women, spindles in hand, danced the wool into becoming as the men dyed the wool and spun and combed it toward the dancing. The men sang out as the wool moved like water between their fingers, soft and life-giving. In the end, the carpet was the great bright song, dance, story of the city, the great soft world itself made incarnate by everyone's hands. And you, poet, whose hands have birthed and cooked, whose heart has sung and opened for us the sacred room of making what you have woven, we walk upon with naked and humble feet. You have given us music to walk to when we move the wool of our own lives into the world's wool's warp and woof. You have made the hard floor soft for us. You have deepened its colors by your youthful eyes' hunger for current and leaf's hard green. In your words, the stones and splinters have vanished, picked out by the mine's smallest fingers. You have lifted what was uneven in us and struck it with your sticks and smoothed it then by spinning us. You danced the whole time. In a trance, you moved from the edge deeper into the story that each time had to be told by the dye of your pen. You built music from music we dance not only to, but on, with our bare feet, sore from walking alone.
That's nice.
Happy birthday, Glenys.
Yeah.
Coming
Happy
up
birthday,
soon.
G. Yeah.
Nice. We're going to play a little more music, and we'll be right back. Some more Brian Eno.
The seal. Black eyes boldly surfaced above the water. I watched when I lived out west. west and wrote long hours alone, testing myself against my own depths. At 5, I'd look out over the bay and see them, my dogs at a time I was too restless for pets.
Is ice? Oh.
Once, I swam up to the place I'd positioned myself on a low rock. He rolled onto his back as though he wanted me to touch his belly.
I see.
Or hers. I'm not much of one for the sexes of seals, or at the time, too guarded against the sex of anything, and lived alone for the year, adjoined to the world by sight alone, and never touch. The body of the seal shone its black attempt at knowing me. Like a still wave, it wavered and lay open as a night sky, inviting the same such thoughts as turn to dreams and change us forever, and still I kept my hand to myself, and perhaps I even wept a little, or perhaps I didn't let it touch me at all. The world soon bellied itself away from me and vanished back into the sea. And some part of me followed. There are times we break out of ourselves. In the book of disappearances of the self from the world, I've written a small chapter in the black ink of seal skin and known that for the animals, sight surrounds like touch. It is the dare they give us not to hold so closely to everything, but the fur and whisker draw us out of ourselves so we can hold more in. I sat every day at 5 and waited for them after that. If there was an after that, everything in me is still changing.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. That was one of my squim encounters when I lived out west.
Mm. And this is a new poem as well? Newish?
That poem is from my summertime visit with my favorite poet, Galway Kinnell.
Oh, yes.
Where after breakfast and a game of croquet, at which he's the bloody master.
Pretty good, eh?
As one might guess. Yeah. And he hungrily is waiting right now up in Vermont for another opponent to come. And I don't even think I was worthy, but he was polite. Anyway, after playing croquet, he handed me a bunch of paper, empty pages, and a pen, and pointed to the dining room table or the breakfast table and said, 1 hour. And he went into the living room and closed the door, and I stayed at the kitchen, and we both wrote in separate rooms for 1 hour. And then we reconnected and shared what we had come up with. And that was one of the ones that surfaced.
Nice. Yeah. Like a little workshop.
It was. And then we played croquet some more.
And you got your butt kicked, right?
I got my butt kicked.
Yeah.
Many times. Well, he's like got the, like, he measures, you know, I think he's got the wickets, like,
yeah, mm-hmm,
like Olympic croquet kind of business thing going
serious
on.
Serious. Yeah.
And when he hits your ball, he will knock you out of the court.
That's the way to go. That's the way to play.
Into the vegetables. But he actually was very polite. He was very, very polite. A very polite croquet partner and opponent. And by the end, I was giving him a little bit of a run for his money, maybe. Or he was just being way overly polite. I'm not sure. But
you know, what you should do is set up your own croquet court at home.
I do. I have
practice.
Yes.
Practice, practice, practice. And then next year when you go back, kick his butt.
That's right. That's right. I know. Yeah. I know. I think he would like that.
Put some money on it.
There you go. Yeah.
I have a little Sunny Patch croquet set from that cartoon for children with little spider faces on the wickets. And,
yeah. So, Galway, if you're listening,
you look out, watch buddy. Out.
Keep your chops up, dude.
But I did write more poems than he did during that hour. So
I'm not surprised.
So that was one of the 1 hour. He said, it is time to turn time into poems. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah. So. Nice.
And so we did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, great. So tell us about the WordFest coming up. This is WordFest 2009. It seems
we're already turning away, right? Turning toward.
Yeah. We are moving towards it. And I'm in the process of grant writing. And I have sent out some emails to some people inviting sponsorship of specific poets or partial sponsorship. And if you are interested in receiving one of these emails inviting with a little menu of how much we'd want, please contact me at laurahopegill@aol.com. And it's no dots, no dashes, laurahopegill@aol.com. Here are the poets that we have. It's quite phenomenal. Li Young Lee will be joining us. Li Young Lee started his Rise Up Our Poetry Consciousness with, I believe he got a Walt Whitman Award from the Academy, and then he followed it with a Lamont, which is the second book prize with the book. I think he won the Whitman with City in Which I Loved You and the Lamont with Rose. And his most recent, there was Book of My Nights, and then recently he's been exploring his family's political history. His father was exiled from China, and they lived in Indonesia, where he became a political prisoner. And Li Young went through a period recently where he believed that political action was the only purpose in life, and he moved away from poetry, actually stopped writing. And this resulted in a case of insomnia. And then he realized that a political movement can't exist without an aesthetic, and has returned to poetry. And this book is the marriage of poetry and politics for him. So he's a perfect feature poet for WordFest, where, with the help of Maine, we're viewing poetry as journalism and marrying those two and keeping art and life together. Enough of this, one mirrors the other. They are the same.
Yeah.
And another poet that is coming is Vajnaya Mort from Belarus, another firecracker. Vajnaya writes in Belarusian and performs in Belarusian and in English. And Russia tried to extinct the Belarusian language, tried to just absorb it into Russian. So her writing is similar to... Her writing in Belarusian is similar to Chaucer writing in English during the French occupation, gathering the language from the villages where he was a minister of walls and ditches or something, and that's where he got the language from. He's like, what is this language that we used to speak? And so this is what she's doing. She's preserving. You can see her on YouTube doing some really cool poetry dub stuff.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Alan Lomax and the original, the field recordings going out and getting the songs down south that were going to go away, and kind of keeping track of the music and the language.
This is it. And the role of the poet, the role of the artist is to keep what needs keeping kept. We are also inviting Ekua Adler Belendez, who comes from Mexico, and he'll be starting at Hampshire College.
And walking all the way here?
Walking all the way here. Yeah. He will not. Ekua has cerebral palsy.
So
it's okay. And he's in... his father will be traveling with him. And this young man, who's in his early 20s, has swept a whole bunch of poetry awards with his work and is so formidable that when Mary Oliver saw him sitting in the front row at one of her readings, she stepped down and gave the mic to him for 30 minutes. Hmm. And so that says a lot. That's and his work is deeply imagistic, spiritual, and... he lives in a straw bale house up in the mountains and just seems like a delight, and I can't wait to welcome him. We're also welcoming the Flying Hands Project, and this is an American Sign Language poetry duo. And in ASL, the poetry is not about sonic rhymes, but the similar movements of the hands. So when we're watching American Sign Language poetry, our experience is entirely visual. And the movement within the deaf community to create a deaf poetry is hot, and the deaf community adores its language. And so we're really thrilled that the Flying Words will be coming here. And I would love to involve the deaf community and the ASL translation community and the School for the Deaf and bringing them here and also participating. Ross Gay and Patrick Russell, who packed the house at Malaprops last year, I think they had...
Yeah, we've had Patrick Gay's reading on the show.
Right, Ross right. Gay and I mean,
excuse me, Ross
Patrick
Gay.
Russell, right, they right, come yeah, they come together, right.
Yeah, they do, right. It's like a dynamic duo.
Right, they packed Malaprops. How many people were there? Oh, Sebastian's checking out Curious George.
Around 50.
150 people packed Malaprops.
About a 50.
About
Malaprops
50 people
hold
packed.
Malaprops won't hold 150.
But they all, Ross and Patrick, they packed Lipinski too?
There was about 120.
No.
Was,
yeah.
Malaprops won't hold 120.
They were people in the back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
all the way in all
right.
the, no, there were,
the
I counted, there was more than 100 people.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think for the,
I mean, I was there too, so yeah.
We're going to take this into the alley out back.
You're wrong.
We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
So they're coming, high energy.
They're amazing. And
Filipino
they're
Filipino-American and African-American.
Good friends, both students of Gerald Stern and...
And have written poems to each other. I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah, great poems about each other, to each other. Very friendly and awesome and politically charged poets.
Right. And also we have Frank X. Walker, the author of Afrolatia, who is creating a voice of the mountain African-American community. And Glennis Redmond will be performing that same evening with Frank.
A good pair. He comes out of the Afrolatian Poets. There's a group, I think, that does workshops.
Is it a group? Okay.
And he, so there's a kind of building of that community that then goes out. Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
So that is, and we also have Deborah Kinsland First, who is of Cherokee, Eastern Band Cherokee Nation, and she writes in both English and the Cherokee language. So we're really living up to our original goal of creating a festival that is as diverse as our own community and that invites a broad perspective of all that's going on in human life right now. We're also really getting the international voice going.
It's really exciting. Yeah,
definitely cross-cultural, as they say, yes.
Yeah, and I'm thrilled to be including the flying Hands and Ekuwa in this to raise awareness of just the poetry is for and by everyone.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
there's no limitation on the imagination.
Yeah, and we'll also be doing a lot of local poetry, poets reading, the flood reading. There'll be, I think, some of the high school slammers will be joining us.
The Word Slam will be the very first night of the festival. So far, we may extend the festival even before the very first night of the festival. We're dreaming it up as we go, but the Arts Council and WordFest will produce the Word Slam.
Yeah.
And then the winners from that will read before the
big
name
up.
Poets.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be the opening act. Mm-hmm. So we really want to involve the youth in WordFest too.
Yeah. What we don't have yet is anybody from the experimental or the New American poetry community.
And we do not. We tried to get Alice Notley. We've gone back and forth
I think
a few times.
We may revisit that sometime between now and
the door's not closed.
Right.
The
right.
door
that's
is not
a good,
closed.
Yeah, that's the connection that oftentimes Black Mountain College kind of, for its connection to our region and our connection to the museum, but that broader sense that we need, that area of writers needs to be...
Yeah.
What's the word?
They're certainly a part of what's happening in terms of poetry in English.
Yeah, well, we've tried. We've emailed her. We've gotten the price.
I know there was some contact.
We started planning travel, and then we're not quite sure what's happened. So, Alice, if you're listening, contact us. She's in Paris,
I'll get
folks. But I'm totally open to hearing and receiving ideas and suggestions, and it really is a situation where the community can build the festival.
I'll get in touch with Leanne, too. And see. Leanne, if you're listening.
She's more likely. Yeah. Hi, Leanne.
The community can build this festival both with its ideas and its money. And that's what I hope it can one day become independent of grant writing and run entirely on neighborhood sponsorship. So if you own a business, if you are independently wealthy, and if you love poetry, then please contact me again, laurahopegill@aol.com, so that we can make this Asheville's Poetry Festival. And if you have a poet you want to sponsor, then if one of these piques your interest, then feel free to call me or contact me, and I'll talk about it with you.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a big thing. We also have 2010 planned.
Moving right along.
It's just as hot. Yeah.
Let's keep that on going. Let's keep that one
under wraps for another, 8 or 9 months at least.
Right. Well, you're listening to Wordplay, as you could probably guess, and this is the Progressive Voice of the Mountains, 103.5 WPVM. I'm Sebastian Matthews. Jeff Davis is with me.
Yeah.
Laura Hope Gill. Abby, glad you're here.
Yeah. Well, Laura used to be one of our co-hosts, you know, for season two.
I might come back.
I don't think so. No, yeah. I don't think so. You were? She was.
She was.
Yeah. And she, you need to come back.
Definitely, definitely.
You better.
This is a place of honor.
Be careful, though. The danger is in a particular location.
Is it the danger extends toward the center?
I love that. Yes, yeah. Yes. It increases towards a center.
A center.
A center. Not the center, but a center.
What does that mean? It increases towards a center. Yeah. That it gets worse as it gets...
It's more concentrated as you get, I guess, towards the center of the concentration of the
This
waste.
Could be a whole, like, a manifesto of poetry. Don't you think? It increases towards the center. The danger is still present in your time as it was in ours. I don't know.
We might run this through a couple of procedural, loops and see what it comes out.
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody should choose one line from that and see what poem comes after.
Yeah. Okay. Next week.
Okay, there we go.
While Glynis is here.
There's our homework assignment.
Sorry, Glynis.
Yeah, give Glynis a copy of it, and we'll see what she comes up with, too.
Let's just give her a line.
I do. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I think this is not a place of honor would be a good line for her.
Scary. Yeah. But everywhere Glynis walks is a place of honor. It becomes it.
There we go. Laura, read us some more poems.
I would love to.
Please.
Also, in talking about WordFest, WordFest would not exist without Maine. And so Indeed. Here at WPVM, I just have to say that.
Yes.
You know, Maine right now is having a fundraiser. It's their annual summer fundraiser for internet, to take back the internet and take back the airwaves. The FCC is scheduled to rule soon, between now, sometime now in October, on... The what's it called, Abby? The name of the actual. Anyway,
I don't know.
Yeah. There's going to be an FCC ruling anyway coming up that affects the ability of Maine to provide broadband wireless internet in rural areas.
Right. Especially. It's the same thing when the television switches over in 2009 to digital.
The white spaces.
Right. So-called. It's going to open up the spectrum so much that they're going to be able to use the analog to provide internet, basically like nationwide Wi-Fi internet access, which is really cool and going to have a whole... it's also related to radio waves, and there's going to be more opportunity for EMS... people who are involved in emergency medical responses. The police department and the fire department would be able to communicate with each other. And right now they can't because they're on two different...
bandwidths, basically. Yeah, two different systems. Yeah, so it would have all kinds of positive impacts. And, of course, the corporations are lobbying like crazy to get control of this white space. Gee, I'm shocked. But it's up to the FCC. The Federal Communications Commission. And so Maine has joined lots of other organizations across the country.
Including Google.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not all the corporate guys are on one side in this one, which is really interesting. Because Google also sees an opportunity in this white space for handheld devices and various and sundry other, you know, internet appliances.
Right.
So, and Maine, of course, is right in the front lines of this thing. So if you can help out, now's a good time. You could even call here today.
Yeah. You can go to Maine's website, www.maine.nc.us. Mm-hmm. You could go to wpvm.org.
Right.
And there's also, aside from financial donations, which we would greatly appreciate, there's also petitions that you can sign that will help lobby the FCC to make them aware that people are concerned about this and it's what the people want.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We were out at the Southeast Energy Expo yesterday getting signatures galore. Yep. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of interest. People have a lot of interest in this. So, yeah, so you can call 258-0085 if you're in Asheville to make a donation, or you can go online and make a donation there. Check out the Maine website, maine.nc.us, for more information.
Help Another trick with this digital TV thing is they don't have closed captions for the hearing impaired.
They don't.
The digital TV thing.
No?
So I won't be able to watch TV.
What do they do with that?
Pardon?
What happened to that, I wonder? Why can
I know.
Why?
When I watch somebody's digital
and
TV,
it didn't have it.
It doesn't have
the closed captioning.
The thingy. And if I'm wrong, somebody call me, because I'm really like, kind of like saying goodbye to television, which isn't a bad thing, considering some of the
really
stuff I watch.
It could be worse.
My 90210 fix, you know, I don't know what to do. Anyway, here
we
go.
You can get it on an iPod and just walk around with it.
iPod doesn't have closed captions for the hearing impaired either.
It should.
It should. Yes, well, there we go.
Although it's not to be missed that iPods have the same shape as hearing aid. And so it's training, everyone, it's training. Here we go. Mulberry turns into stone. The taxi driver at the 5 a.m. train station said, giving us directions, Mulberry turns into stone. The sky wasn't even breaking itself open to hold the sun. It was so dark, and the driver had wavy, graying hair the color of stone when it is quarried and kept from all the other stones inside the mountain. Behind him, Norfolk Southern trains slept stone still on the iron tracks that connect land to land and keep places like the place where the mulberry turns to stone from being forgotten. As every place of change lessens the dimensions of the moment, so that only when we are looking back can we say, there. That is where it happened. Three things I did not ask the taxi driver that morning. When mulberry turns into stone, what belongs to all the juices that let them leave? When mulberry turns into stone, how does stone take over something so alive and fresh? When mulberry turns into stone, will I have the courage to name what is happening and climb myself out of the way as when two lovers are kissing, the shorter one yearns to climb the taller like a child climbs a tree, but the lover yearns to climb the inside, travel along the journey of the water within, uproot, up xylem, penetrate the phloem of the tree until she turns to bark and hardens there upon her lover's skin. When mulberry turns into stone, what happens to the mulberry-ness of the mulberry? For deep inside all things that have once lived and gone into death, isn't the memory still flowing of having been once full of life? We drove away from the tracks into the breaking night. Light was now appearing from, it seemed, through the surrounding mountains. Repeating his directions, we drove through the pass of roads and light. The rest of the body. You will be through the mist when it hits you, how slow some sudden things take. The single wing, as bodiless as it is flightless, lies at the foot of my house, meters below the vast window, not vast enough to have been the sky for the bird. My stepfather noticed it, saying, "You have a wing down there." And I looked and saw its orange, black, and white feathers outspread jack-o'-lantern shades of death, I suppose among 1,000,000 things there are to suppose from the top step, looking down through the branches of a hawthorn into the Virginia creeper filling the ground from which it has yet to creep up. one wing, one thing I never wanted to see. There is simply nothing to save or even bury. I have popsicle-sticked the broken wings of the birds. I have even tied some birds down in a box to keep them from breaking even more. I've fed them bits of bugs. But it was never just the bird that I was saving. It was never about the bird. I believe in the agency of the passing back and forth of things between the worlds, and in the effort it takes to learn what's meant to stay. I believe in the startled eye of the bird as it lies on the ground, sunstruck by the sunless glass, and how it waits there a moment always before its bones correct themselves or fail to, and the wing that is broken flies it up away from the illusion, either seen or unseen. It is a constant tug with death at one end of the rope, I think, but it is all one rope, and no one holds it, and everything's woven in. So when the single wing appears, there is a horror story attached of how the cat might have reached up, finding the fallen thing, but yet what animal rips off the wing of even the most dead thing and leaves no trace of body, no blood, no bone? Something worse than death had come here and gone, and I had not seen it. Among anomaly, here is this. Another is what I thought, looking down, trying not to tell the story of the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Are these written since Soultree?
I beg your pardon?
Are these written since Soultree?
Yes, these are written.
Yeah, there's a whole new level of attention to language going on in your work. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Of course.
Soultree was a descent. It was a deep descent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another short one?
Yeah, and two, please. Mm-hmm.
The hiker. The hiker hands out his life not like the rest of us. He lives more the giving away. So tall, he resembles trees passing along the wind. He grips to nothing, but devours everything in sight. Everything in his world serves multiple purposes. The water bottle has duct tape wrapped around so it adheres as well as hydrates. He sees the world in terms of places to sleep. When he sleeps, his dreams are moistened by rain outside his tent, or they perspire the hot night from inside itself. His body, which has taken on the weight of nature, drifts pearl-like among the stars that take the shape of owls and bears, large and small, and a hunter out for his own kill.
Hmm. Yep. Nice.
I had an idea. See if you guys will help me out.
Okay.
There are a couple of new books we just mentioned coming out from local writers. You mentioned Glennis's Under the Sun.
And Laura's.
Laura's coming out. We mentioned that too.
In February.
Mm-hmm. Alan Wolfe is coming out with a book with Sarah Holbrook called More Than Friends. And it's a book that I recently reviewed along with a few other books, Glennis's for the Asheville Poetry Review, which will be coming out soon. And I'm excited for that journal to come out again. Keith always does a good job. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you guys, this book is written in the voice of two teenagers who are falling kind of in and out of love, trying to figure out how they're going to make it work. And the first two poems are called What Do You Do When She Looks At You? And What Do You Do When He Looks At You? And I wondered if, Jeff, you'd read Romeo?
Sure.
And you would read Juliet?
I'd be honored.
Okay. So this is Alan Wolfe and Sarah Holbrook, More Than Friends, Poems from Him and Her. It's coming out in October from Word Song. I don't know if you'll be doing something to Malaprops, but I think you will. And it'll certainly be sold there or on BookSense on the web.
What do you do when she looks at you? Becoming glued and crimson-hued? Turn away, afraid to stare, bury your face in your biology book, or return the look? What do you do when she looks at you? Shout her name from atop your chair, flare your nostrils, pose and flex, bellow like a buffalo bull in love, yodel like a loincloth-clad Tarzan, or take her hand? What do you do when she looks at you? 100 things I could have done. 100 words lay on my tongue. 100 pickup lines marched by. I just said hi.
What do you do when he looks at you? For sure, if he's looking, here's the rule. Stand tall, inhale, and tummy hold. Then try to sneak a peek, but still maintain your cool. Be subtle, private, ask your friends to spy. Adjust your belt, fluff hair, moisten teeth, stall, turn your back, search purse, and check your phone. Don't panic or betray, your knees are weak. Don't mope or look pathetic when alone. Don't scratch your nose or pick or pill. Don't be a tramp, but you should show some skin. Don't wolf down food. Pretend you're full. Look interested, just not in him. These rules are set in concrete. Don't ask why. You have to follow them or just say hi.
Nice. Nicely read. Cute. These guys, this was just, you know, off the cuff. As you could hear, there's a sonnet there in that second poem, the free verse with the refrain. Each poem at the end of the page has a little mention of what kind of poem it is or what kind of form it's messing
Lovely.
With. And in the back, there's a little bit of a primer on different poetry forms. There are pictures all throughout. It's a great book. And it's not a, it's one that I think captures, as you guys did, the voices of teens. Not talking down. There's some funny ones. He says all girls are bubbleheads. Veggie panini is the answer to everything. It sounds like Alan. He's not a fake. You think I dressed myself for him today? And others. So check it out. It's coming out in October.
It's a beautiful little book, too. Great for anyone who has teenagers or tweens.
Tweens, yeah. I have a poem by Thomas Rankrow from his book Radiogenesis that came out from Main Street Rag less than a year ago. And I think it's a good book. It's a big book for him. It's an important book. It's a 20 years of some of his better poems that he put together from different
places.
Yeah, it's
kind of a return to roots too. Because Thomas started out basically in the French surrealist, and American surrealist tradition.
Yep.
And so this gets back, I think, to that use of imagery that surrealism is so wonderful at.
But, and as this guy, Jack Hirschman, a great San Francisco poet, said, he also grounds it in a kind of basic realism. And what the poems are based in is a lot of their love poems. There's kind of sex poems, erotic poems. Mm-hmm. And this one that doesn't really, it's a little different. And I was surprised and happy to see it. It's a poem called Somebody, because it's got so much play in it that oftentimes Thomas's poems are intense and strong and good, but not always playful. And this one's pretty playful. Somebody. I live in a land where somebody made love to somebody, who sang softly to the heart of somebody, who got up and turned on the light for somebody, who played music for the next day for somebody, who loved music more than life and died listening to Bach with somebody at the same time that the wailing wall fell down from the weight of too many hands. Hands of too many somebodies broke the camel's back, which was brought by somebody in the business of fixing back what was wrong with some country's leaders and the land he loved during a time of peace when no peace came and went without so much as a thank you or a show of hands for somebody trying to right the wrong, for somebody to try to right the wrong of revolutions gone mad, mad at somebody born in a church that belongs to somebody who wears 10 golden rings, who gave grace to somebody who didn't even grieve, who lived in a faraway land of things, things without wings, with somebody she didn't even know, who was her mirror of not knowing that she looked into and saw somebody else we'd never known, who wanted to run off with somebody to Corfu or Crete, where they could drink wine made of dates with somebody that at night would read to them of the future of forbidden wars, which were no longer fought with somebody who showed up to fight, but was at home in the woods with somebody making love.
That's lovely. It's got like that Middle Eastern ghazal thing of the refrain happening, and Thomas has done so much work with Hafiz and Rumi and Shams.
But it's all embedded in the poem.
That's
poem
so
just kind
lovely.
Of runs through it. And
It kind of reminds me of Thief of Words, his earlier piece, Thief of Words, which is, I've always enjoyed. Yeah. So
this is a fantastic book. I enjoyed reading it and going through it. So look for the Asheville Poetry Review as well, those the reviews of Gary Lilly's book that we read a poem from last week, Glennis's work, and probably a piece by Jay Bonner, there usually is.
Wonderful.
And other great poems.
A lot of stuff happening in the poetry world.
You know, look strange.
We got great poets
it's not
here
the Olympics,
in Asheville.
But, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean...
We are our own water cube.
Yeah. Man, did you guys see the opening, whatever that was, light show movie extravaganza? Was pretty amazing. There's some gorgeous.
I haven't followed the Olympics.
You should get online and check out some of the. There's some beautiful visuals that were made and.
Yeah, some of them CGI. I mean,
right. but some of them totally manpowered. Like this incredible kind of. Undulating field of cubes that looked totally like a hydraulic computer-based thing. And at the end, all these people, guys, just popped out of
it's
each
puppetry.
Little cube. It was puppetry. Right? Yeah. Mm. And you realize that the guy who orchestrated it had made sure that everybody was the same height because they had to. It was like a huge trombone. They had to when they stood up and lifted their arms. They had to everything had to kind of be at the same level. I mean, it was pretty amazing. Mm. And it reminded me a lot of poetry as well, just in the sense of the power. So missing and rare in American athletics of real symbolism and real image at in a large scale where you can do an image and it means something more than just like, you know, rock on, America's the best. It was these things were about China and they were about peace and they were stunning.
Art, right? I'm just like, I went to China a few years ago and rode a pedicab for like 3 hours through the Hutongs, which were destroyed to make space for the Olympics.
And what are the
Futongs are the little courtyard neighborhoods
in
Beijing, and they've been there for like 100,000 years.
And they were
not 100,000 years, but like for thousands of years.
And they were destroyed?
10,000.
10,000, maybe not even that long. But then they're forever and are forever. And just riding through them, just like amazed, like all the houses were connected and no traffic, no cars. So here you have this entire way of life for 10,000 people, I think, got moved.
10,000 years and 10,000
years.
People.
And
there are 10,000 ways.
Right, but that's where the 10,000 comes from. But that was all destroyed to make room for the Olympic stuff. Hmm. And the changes that have gone on in China, $40 billion worth of construction and
Olympics.
Changes. Yeah. And they've poisoned their rivers. The rivers are flowing white and green. And that's the Yellow River that we're talking about.
Yeah, the formerly Yellow River.
Right. And the changes happened so fast, so suddenly, so abruptly that it's dangerous. And
China's still confronting industrialism and the whole impact of it. I mean, you know, the air, they had to close the factories and you know, restrict traffic in Beijing just so the air would be breathable for the
Everybody
Olympics.
Could drive on every other day.
Right.
Like every other day they could use cars. And when I was there, I couldn't. I was there for 3 days, and I was sick for 3 weeks afterwards, like coughing.
Yeah.
And
think about the runners. I was watching the marathoners, thinking, man.
Oh,
man.
Right.
Or triathletes. I mean, what it just.
And
how are they doing that? Right. I couldn't even walk down the street. Right. I mean, it was so my eyes were burning. So I don't know. I've just been mixed about the whole China thing and Tibet and all that. So I've just been kind of like, okay, I'll watch a diver here and there. But and I love the divers. Yeah. That little poof, little tiny splash after all that fancy stuff.
Yeah, right.
I love that. But the rest I'm just sort of like too politically confused about it all because my family has Chinese history. My grandfather was there during the Boxer Rebellion. He was a translator, and my grandfather was a physician there. My father was born there, and so I have this. I don't know. China and I.
Go way
I'll
back,
have to have one day sit down and have a long talk about kites.
I stepped into something.
You really did. You really just like, you know, thrown up the swarm of bees in my psyche. But otherwise, watch the divers.
Yeah.
The gymnasts
I
were
bet
great.
You do. I bet you watch the divers.
Yeah. I do love the divers.
Yeah. The gymnasts were great, too. Yeah. I enjoyed the gymnasts. That's what I saw more of than anything else. So,
okay. CDs. I think we have time for one more poem. We're beginning to drift here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The Olympic drift.
Yeah. It's the last day of the Olympics, I believe. So,
This is a poem inspired by my daughter, who is 5, and everything is a little bit of something else. I'm a little bit of hungry, or I'm a little bit of sad, and this one is a little bit of far. how my daughter wakes up so happy to see me and smiles and moves a little closer in is something the lilacs growing at the far edge of a garden equals. High spring, but can't subtract late autumn. The circumference of her forearm is that of a pestle. Let the world be her mortar. She collects the smallest things of the house and plans a yard sale under the dining room table. When we say we're going outside, she answers, "It's a little bit afar," and I sense the walls fall away from surrounding us, our skin grow thin enough for the light that shines between the parts of things to come blinding through. It is a little bit afar, always, that will keep me from having her ever again. A little bit afar that a distance such as this will shrink to into infinity, we go outside the door of when we go. A little bit of far.
A little bit of far, indeed, indeed. That's very nice. Yeah.
Laura?
Sebastian.
As always, it's good to have you. Sorry, checking out my 5-year-old there.
Right, definitely.
Oh, I should let everybody know that we've now made worked out an agreement with iBiblio.com so that our Wordplay shows are going to be permanently archived iBiblio. It'll be iBiblio.com/wordplay.
We should probably write up something like this.
For when it's found 10,000 years in the future.
Yeah, right.
Everything happened 10,000 years ago, or it's going to happen 10,000 years to 10,000 people.
Nothing valued is here.
This is not a place of honor.
Yeah. This place is best shunned and left uninhabited.
There you go. Enter at your own risk. Yeah.
So what does that mean exactly? I mean, how can people, they can go there at some point soon and just download or...
Right. I'll be posting links to the shows as they're uploaded on my blog, naturespoetry.com, naturespoetry.blogspot.com. And, but yeah, that's where they'll be. They're going to do them all. So there you go. I'll keep folks posted.
Good news.
I won't be able to, I'll be uploading a few at a time, given bandwidth limitations and all that kind of stuff. So.
And see you on Friday night at 7 at Malaprops for Glennis Redman's Under the Sun launch.
Right.
I'll be there.
I will too.
Laura, thanks so much for coming.
You've been
listening to Wordplay. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Abby.
Zuhut.
Han Han Zhou, that means go slowly in Chinese.
WPVM 103.5 FM. Going slow, progressively in the mountains.
Zai Tian.
We'll leave you with a little more Brian Eno. Just a low sound, such a low sound, passing over, drawing closer. Shit horizon, flame horizon, haze of morning, magnets drawing all the force.